Hello, dear friends. It's wonderful to see you all here this afternoon or this evening, depending on where you are and what time it is for you. Maybe even somewhere this morning, I don't know. But it's nice to see you all. What we're going to be doing for the next hour is looking at the 7 steps to awakening, along with my journal writings as I contemplated the 7 steps to awakening. And tonight when we begin, we're going to begin with quote 637. So I'm going to put in the room a link to 637A, which is where we'll begin. By the way, someone wrote to Lynn about a week ago wanting to know how to find all of my 7 steps audios. And all of my 7 steps audios up to a certain point were on my old website, but I don't know if you guys remember, a couple of years ago, my old website was deleted. And I didn't rebuild it. I didn't spend time rebuilding it. It had hundreds probably of audios on it. I just created a new, simpler website and started forward from there. So my 7 steps audios from the past were not on my website. But when this person asked about them this week, something in me said to go ahead and re-archive those and put those on my website. So I am now in the process. I do a few every day. I'm now in the process of recovering and re-archiving the 7 steps audios all the way back from the very first teaching, which happened in probably January 2012. All of step 1 has been recovered, and probably about half of step 2 has been recovered now. So there's already dozens and dozens of audios recovered. So if anyone is interested in going back and listening to the old audios, you will find them on reginadonacres.com under audios. You'll find a new menu option for the 7 steps to awakening. And you click there, and I'll just keep adding them there. So those audios are coming back. And I expect to have them all up within a month, maybe even sooner. I do about 5 or 6 a day. I'm bringing them back. So what I would like to do is take a moment of silence, but what I seem to do now is take that moment of silence along with music. So I'm going to play a song. It's called Glory and Grace, and it's by Denise Hagen.
Be poured upon your life, breath of
All right. Wonderful. So, as I mentioned, we're going to start with quote 637 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. These quotes are coming from the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha. And this is the first quote. Egotism promotes cravings. Without it, they perish. Egotism promotes cravings. Without it, they perish. It's interesting to think about the fact that all of our cravings come from the ego. I think sometimes people get statements like that, though, mixed up with the idea of what I call the I am bad thought. I think that when we talk about cravings, and there's teachings, of course, there are many teachings that recommend that we transcend our cravings. And there are many teachings that recommend methods of transcending cravings, the most common being to observe them without acting on them. But Ramana Maharshi recommends that we inquire into them. You know, look to see who or what observes the craving, to distinguish between our true self, which has no cravings, and the mind, which is expressing craving. And the reason so many teachings ask us to transcend our cravings is because the cravings are ego, and the teachings are helping us to transcend the ego. But what often happens when people read these teachings is the I am bad thought in their own mind gets in the way. And what they read as the teacher is talking about transcending cravings or transcending desires or transcending habit energies, what they read is as if the teacher is saying, you are bad because you have these habits, or you are bad because you have these addictions, or you are bad because you have these cravings. And actually, if you look very, very carefully, the teachers aren't saying that. The teachers are talking about transcending ego. And a part of transcending ego is transcending these cravings, these addictions, these habits. And the teachers are not saying you are bad because you have them, but this is what the reader reads. And the reason the reader reads that is because the I am bad belief is still alive in the mind. And so then what often happens is the way people respond to those teachings is by saying something like, well, I'm not bad because I eat too much, or I'm not bad because I, you know, binge on chocolate every night. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't have to listen to this teaching. And you know, and there's a truth and an untruth in that statement. Yes, you're not bad because you binge on chocolate every night. No one said you were bad. But again, this is about transcending ego energies. And that is coming from an ego energy. That binging is coming from an ego energy, as well as many other habits and conditionings that we have. So I love the way that Yoga Vasistha is saying it. Yoga Vasistha is being very clear that the ego promotes cravings. That's where cravings come from. And then just says, without ego, the cravings perish. They fall away. So as we let go of ego, those cravings fall away is one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is as we learn to transcend these cravings, ego falls away. You see, it's really the same thing. Teachers are just approaching it kind of in two different directions. So let's see, when I looked at this, 2.5 years ago, let's see what this was saying to me then. So again, the quote we're looking at is, egotism promotes cravings. Without it, they perish. And I'm going to read from the journal now, number 637A. How do I know if I am identified with the body personality? Do I find myself craving anything? Do I give in to cravings? Do I suffer from cravings as I try to resist them? What are cravings? And then I also asked, what are temptations? What are desires? Aren't they just lines in the script? Character thoughts? If I give in to cravings or suffer from them, aren't I believing character lines as if they are my thoughts? And doesn't that mean I am identified with the body personality as me? It's sometimes challenging for people to see that the thoughts that show up in their mind, what seems to them to be a private mind, the thoughts that show up in their apparent private mind are not their thoughts. But that's really what this journal entry is pointing to. First of all, the idea of a private mind, that I have a private mind with thoughts that are just mine, and that you have a private mind with thoughts that are just yours, that idea is not true. That idea is a false idea. There is something happening. People call it by many different things, but I'm going to call it the process of creation. There is something happening where, based on the way we are all believing, desiring, reacting, responding, or not being involved with the current moment, through the energy of our involvement and belief or non-involvement with the current moment, the current moment continues to be made. And I call this the process of creation, although it has many different names. Through the process of creation, every detail of this current moment is given. That's often called the script or karma. And a part of the detail that is given in this current moment script is the thought that appears in my mind. First of all, right there, that shows it's not a private mind, because a private mind would be walled off and no thought from something outside of it could enter, you know, so it really would be private. But in addition to showing that's not the private mind, the fact that thoughts come from the script or the process of creation, in addition to showing the mind is not private, it also shows that the thoughts are not my thoughts. It is just a thought. A thought. So any thought of judgment that shows up, any thought of fear that shows up, right now we're talking about cravings. So any thought of craving that shows up is a thought being delivered through the script, which was made by the process of creation, which means it was made by the whole. When I believe that I am a person, and I believe that I have a private mind, and I believe that the thought that shows up is my thought, I am then very, very attached to that thought. So if the thought starts whispering about, you know, the Oreos in the cupboard, like it does every night at 8:30 p.m., the next thing I know, I'm up and walking towards the kitchen so that I can grab those Oreos and start having my nightly binge. Also, and equally true, if the thought shows up to have the Oreo cookies, and I believe I am a body, a person, they're the same thing, a body, person, mind, And I believe that thought is my thought, and maybe I also think I've been gaining too much weight lately. I don't want to eat that cookie, and I try to resist that craving. I suffer. In resisting, we always suffer. So I then begin to suffer because I'm trying to resist something that my mind is telling me I really want. My body maybe even is telling me I really want, and I suffer. That too proves that I think I am the body, personality, mind, and that this thought to have the Oreos is mine. So whether I give in to the thought, get up, go in the kitchen and eat another 12 Oreos, or whether I suffer because I'm trying not to, either way, it shows that I think I'm a body, personality, and a mind, and I think that thought is mine. If I have clarity that what I am is pure awareness, and I have clarity that that thought is just another little output of a process of creation, there's not this attachment or this gravity to it. I don't need to give in to it, and I don't need to suffer from it. I don't need either. Which again is why the original quote says, egotism promotes cravings, without it they perish. Now, egotism, let me just define that, because sometimes we throw words around a lot and we don't stop and define them. So let me define egotism. Egotism is the belief that I am this independent, private, separate personality, body, mind. That's egotism. The belief that I am this private, personal, independent, individual, different from you, separate person, body, mind, that's egotism. And again, when I'm believing that, I am either going to give in to the craving or suffer as I try to resist the craving that I believe is mine, mine, my craving. But if I am clear that I am awareness, the observer of everything, and that this thought is nothing but a part of everything, no more my thought than the snores coming from the dog or my snores. I'm awareness witnessing a show, a play. Then I neither have to give in to the craving nor have to suffer from resisting it. That's why Yoga Vasistha says, without egotism, the cravings perish. In awareness, knowing myself as awareness, there is no egotism. There is no belief that I am the body, mind, personality. Therefore, there is no gravity of thinking a thought is my thought or a craving is my craving. There's no need to be a slave to it, and there's no need to fight it and resist it. So 37A says, how do I know if I am identified with the body personality? So this is just looking, you know, because one thing that can happen, what can happen is that we can mentally imagine ourselves not to be attached to the body personality as who I am. We can spend a lot of time telling people, you know, oh, I know I'm not a body. and yet still be slaves to these cravings or still be suffering trying to resist them. So what 37A is doing is it's bringing in that honesty. It's saying, look, don't lie to yourself and tell yourself that you don't believe you are the body personality while you are also either a slave to cravings or suffering from resisting them because you believe so much that they're your cravings. If you believe so much that they're your cravings, then you do believe you're the body personality. Let's at least start with a sense of honesty here. So 637A says, how do I know if I am identified with the body personality? do I find myself craving anything? Do I give in to cravings? Do I suffer from cravings as I try to resist them? What are cravings? Aren't they just lines in the script? Character thoughts? If I give in to cravings or suffer from them, aren't I believing character lines as if they are my thoughts? And doesn't that mean I am identified with the body personality as me? So I'm going to scroll down and click on 637B underneath the comment and reply area. This is looking at the exact same quote. Again, the quote from Yoga Vasistha is, egotism promotes cravings. Without it, they perish. 637B says, fighting or resisting cravings is not different than giving in to them. Both emphasize the idea, I am the one who craves. When faced with an apparent craving, it is better to ask, who craves? What am I? With a shift in identity, apparent cravings fall away because they are not associated with true identity, or that could say the true self or awareness. So, first of all, something that's not in this particular journal entry, but I'm just going to mention it anyway because I have observed that this is a problem. First of all, we have to be clear on the realization that we are not bad because of our cravings. And again, that idea comes into the mind often when people listen to these types of teachings or read these types of teachings. What they see the teacher saying that isn't there is, you are bad, you are bad, you are bad, you are bad. And that's not being said. That's an interpretation that's occurring in the mind. And we need to see that that interpretation is occurring in the mind, and that this whole discussion has absolutely nothing to do with you being bad. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about transcending ego. We're talking about realizing your true self instead of continuing to believe you are what you aren't. Nobody's talking about being bad and being good. That has nothing to do with this conversation. So that idea doesn't belong here. But what we are saying is that if you either find yourself as a slave to cravings or habit energies or conditioning or desire, and we all know when we're a slave to something. I think we've all been a slave to something. We may even all be a slave to something right now. And again, I'm using eating as an example because I think in our country, being a slave to eating, late night snacking especially, that's very common. That's very common. Many of us are a slave to that late night call, you know, to the chocolate or the chips or whatever our thing is, the pizza, you know, the ice cream. But there are many other things that we could see ourselves as a slave to. You know, it could be smoking cigarettes. It could be smoking pot. It could be other kinds of drugs. It can be, I'm going to call it inappropriate sex. And by inappropriate, I don't mean bad. I just don't know. I can't think of another word. But you know that the sex is coming from this craving that you are a slave to. Maybe other people are getting hurt, getting used. You know, there's no love in it. You know if it's happening to you. That's another addiction. I'm sure there are others. Anger can be a part of this. Getting angry, getting jealous can be a part of this. Getting all victim-y, all woe is me, all nobody loves me, all nobody thinks about me. That can be a part of this. There are so many of these habit energies or conditioning habits that we have that we are really slaves to. And so that's what I'm talking about right now. I want to be very clear that I'm talking about things that we are slaves to, things that something in us knows that we would be better off if we've transcended this, and yet night after night or day after day, we keep repeating the habits. Also, I want to be very clear, as I already mentioned, we're not saying that we're bad for these. Nobody's saying we're bad, but we are saying they come from ego, and that if we're slaves to them, it means that we believe we are the body-mind personality. We are attached to the ego. That's what this is showing us. This is an outward picture of our inward belief. Lynn says her late afternoon Mountain Dew. That's one I've never had in my long list, Lynn. I'll try to remember to add that next time. If you're addicted to Mountain Dew, coffee is another one. Some people know that they drink way too much coffee, right? Or Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola. Yeah, certainly. All those things. We can all know, wow, I have too many of those. I can't live without those. I got to take them everywhere I go with me, right? Yeah, so we all know what we're slaves to. So chocolate, peanut butter, candy. Absolutely. There's mine right there. So, so as I was saying, so when we're slaves to things, being a slave to these things is an outward picture of an inward condition. And that's really what we're talking about is the inward condition. The inward condition is the belief that I am the person, body, mind. You see, that's the real problem. This addiction, this habit, this craving is merely a symptom of another problem. And it's the other problem that we really want to transcend. And again, not only is it the giving in to having the Mountain Dew, not only is it the giving in to that shows that I believe I'm a body, person, mind. But if I suffer in resisting it, if I suffer in trying not to do it, you know, that's also evidence that I believe I'm a body, personality, mind. So what 637B is saying is that a really helpful way to meet this situation, since the real problem is that I think I'm the false self, the body, personality, mind. Since that's the real problem, a great solution, a great way to meet these cravings or habit energies is self-inquiry. Self-inquiry. Start asking questions within myself to distinguish what am I. You know, so one craving, if the Oreos are calling, one question we can ask if the Oreos are starting to call again. You know, it's 8:30 at night and it's starting to happen. First of all, we can pause and look and ask, where is this thought that I need Oreos? Sharon says vanilla Oreos. Where is this thought that I need Oreos? That can be helpful, because if you really ask where is this thought, you might notice the thought is in the mind. It's the mind. As soon as you see that it's in the mind, you've already taken a step away from saying, I need Oreos, right? Because now it's an object, the mind, that is putting forth this thought. So you've already stepped back. And then once you see that it's the mind that is saying, you know, I need those Oreos, I need those Oreos, I need those Oreos, you can start looking and saying, what sees this thought? What is it that sees the thought, I need the Oreos? And if you really look as you're asking the question, it's not the verbalization of the question that's really important. It's the looking that accompanies the question. That's what's really important. And if you really look, what you're going to notice is that what you are, I'm going to call it more intimately you than the mind, because the mind has been lying, saying it's you. This is more intimately you. What you are is looking at the object of the mind saying, I need the Oreos, I need the Oreos, I need the Oreos. But in you, there's no such thought, there's no such craving, there's just being. To be honest, there's just being. And then you can, you know, even further that realization by saying, what am I? And when you say, what am I, after you've looked and you've seen this, you go deeper into awareness as what is you. And as you go deeper into awareness as what you are, you're then further away from the mind and its idea of craving. And you know, there's a big difference, at least in my experience, there's a big difference between the self-inquiry we're talking about and trying to resist a craving, especially trying to resist a craving because I'm bad or because I'm weak or because I'm fat, right? When you try and resist a craving because I'm bad, I'm weak, I'm fat, what are you believing? If you're saying I'm bad, I'm weak, or I'm fat, aren't you still associated with the body mind as what you are? But you see, the self-inquiry, the looking, the actual looking that accompanies the self-inquiry shifts you away from the idea that you are that body mind personality into the awareness of what you are. So it's much different than resisting a craving out of the belief that I'm bad, I'm weak, or I'm fat, or whatever, or something similar. So self-inquiry is not resistance. Of course, it's not indulging and giving in either. It's looking and noticing, I am not craving. I am not craving. What I am does not crave. And when you realize what I am does not crave, you've, at least in those moments, dropped the idea that you are the false personality body self. You have shifted away from the ego to what you often call the right mind. Shifted from the wrong mind into the right mind. Shifted from the ego into awareness. So again, 637B says, fighting or resisting cravings is not different than giving in to them. Both emphasize the idea, I am the one who craves.
Oh, hello, Shiloh.
When faced with an apparent craving, it is better to ask, who craves? What am I? With a shift in identity, apparent cravings fall away because they are not associated with true identity. So that takes us then on to number 638. Let's see, Allison says, even if not a slave to Oreo, is indulging with anything egotism. I enjoy Oreos every now and then. Well, again, I wanted to point out I was talking about being a slave because, you know, sure, everybody maybe has an Oreo every now and then. I'm not talking about the every now and then things that just, you know, happen. You know, here's an Oreo and we say thank you and we eat it. I am talking about those energies that we're slaves to. So there is a difference. And again, I don't want to imply that I'm saying eating Oreos is bad or smoking cigarettes is bad or sex is bad. I'm not talking about that either. I am talking about the energies that we are slaves to. And any of us who are a slave to any energy, whether it's eating an Oreo or being the woe is me victim or anything else, we know it. We know it if we want to be honest. I guess we could deny it. But if we want to be honest, we know it, and we know exactly what's being talked about here. And we know we all have these experiences. This is a part of believing that we are a body-mind. This is a part of the glue that keeps us believing we're a body-mind. Yeah, David is saying it's quite easy to know what to look at. If it doesn't feel right, that's a good sign to look. And we do have intuition. Our intuition does tell us when our habits are not wholesome, not helpful. We can deny that intuition and we can push it way, way down, but somewhere we know. we can't ever lie to ourselves 100%. You know, we have to keep re-repressing it when we're lying to ourselves. We have to keep re-repressing it because the truth keeps trying to come up, right? So yeah, we know. All right, so I'm going to go on to 638. I will begin by reading another quote from Yoga Vasistha. This quote says, "Abandon your reliance on fate or gods created by dull-witted people and by self-effort and self-knowledge make the mind no mind." Okay, so there's not a comma in here, which made me read this a little wrong. So I'm going to read it a little differently because now that I've read the entire quote, I can see where maybe the comma should have gone so I know where to pause. So let's try this again with my imaginary comma. Abandon your reliance on fate or gods created by dull-witted people, comma. And by self-effort and self-knowledge, make the mind no mind. Okay, I'll read that one more time with the imaginary comma. Abandon your reliance on fate or gods created by dull-witted people, comma. And by self-effort and self-knowledge, make the mind no mind. Now, what I imagine here, and I confess that I am imagining, is that Yoga Vasistha was speaking to someone who was superstitious. You know, when he talks about abandoning your reliance on fate or gods created by dull-witted people, I think, you know, if you had been talking to someone who really believed in astrology and who, you know, went to an astrologist all the time in order to have advice, he would say, abandon your reliance on astrology. If he was talking to someone who really believed in tarot cards and tea leaves and palm reading, he would say, abandon your reliance on those things. And some of us may look at ourselves and we say, well, you know, this quote then doesn't really apply to me. I think I'll go to the bathroom now. This is a good time to go to the bathroom because I'm not superstitious, so I don't need to listen to this part. But before you run off to the bathroom, I think maybe we need to look a little deeper. Oh, that's a good one. David says, abandon your reliance on the I am bad thought. Yeah, you know, one of my favorite examples in our particular culture of this is Jesus. Because, you know, so many of us love Jesus. And in fact, the whole time I'm speaking to you, I have this lovely picture of Jesus that we found when we were walking the Jesus Trail. We found this picture hanging inside the church at Cana, where Jesus is said to have turned the water into wine. And we fell in love with that picture, and one friend found copies of the picture for everybody that was on the trip and sent them out to us, and it hangs right here, right in front of my eyes when I'm speaking to you in Pal Talk. And often I'm looking at you, and by looking at you, I mean I'm scanning your names in the room so that I know who's here, and I'm literally looking at you, because many of you I know, but at least half of the time, I'm looking right into the eyes of Jesus while I'm talking. You know, I love Jesus. But Jesus is one of the places where we fall into maybe not quite superstition, maybe sometimes, but not quite superstition, but we fall into false beliefs that we think are true. You know, there are so many stories about the life of Jesus. The four Gospels alone, you know, I think they're called the canon, maybe. They're the ones that were approved by the Roman Catholic Church. The four Gospels alone, even if we looked at only those four stories, do not agree entirely on the story of Jesus, and sometimes some of the differences are quite drastic. And then those aren't the only stories we have. We have many other different types of gospels that were not allowed into the Bible, not approved of. And then we have all of these stories that have been channeled, you know, all different channelers channeling different stories that, you know, this is the real story of Jesus. It's coming from Saint Germain or whatever. I mean, I don't think any of us have any idea of how many stories there are of Jesus claiming to be the true story, what really happened. But what most of us do, until we wise up to it and stop it, what most of us do is we believe our favorite version of the story. And then we believe that our version of the story is the true historical Jesus. This is who Jesus was and is, and everybody else is wrong. And what we don't see is that we've entered into a false type of belief that I'm certain Yoga Vasistha could equally say, abandon your reliance on your false ideas about Jesus, and by self-effort and self-knowledge, make the mind no mind. Right? Abandon your reliance on your false beliefs about Jesus, or even take out the word false. Abandon your reliance on your beliefs about Jesus. And by self-effort and self-knowledge, make the mind no mind. Yeah, Len is saying, amazing, and it is amazing, because we all do this all the time, and it's just amazing. It sounds like something that maybe children would do, but it sounds like once we grow up, something we should have outgrown, and we don't. And we don't. Len says, amazing. I tell myself a story, and I believe it is true, and it came from outside of myself. What Yoga Vasistha is recommending is that we stop. Hold on one second. We may have a dog attack. Hold on one second. I have to go help Danielle. Jamie! Jamie, come here. Come here. You little devil. Come out here. Come out here. No. You come out here. Come out here. You come here. You stay in here. Yes. No. No. You stay in here. No. Come here. Jamie, come here. Jamie is really, really sweet, except every now and then with Shiloh. And every now and then they have to be separated, and this was one of those times. I heard Jamie getting in her attack, I'm going to eat you mode. So she's in here with me now. She can't eat anybody. All right. Jamie's jealous. I think what happens is there must be a little bit of food in there. It's usually around food that this happens. So there must be a little bit of food in there. All right, so back to the teaching. Abandon your reliance on, he says, fate or gods created by dull-witted people. I am just going to say, stuff stories that you believe and you make them holy. You say, this is the holy truth. Right? And then you think other people are wrong, you are right. You might even get into debates and arguments about what is true and what is not true. Your story about what you think is true becomes a personal identification. And it's actually helping to keep the ego alive. When I was guided to let go of my beliefs about Jesus, what the inner wisdom said to me was, if there was a Jesus, which is an interesting start, because in the word if, that means the inner wisdom wasn't even confirming whether there was or wasn't a man named Jesus. So this is how deeply it was asking me to let go of my beliefs about Jesus. It said, if there was a Jesus, even he had to let go of the idea of Jesus. Certainly you do. Right? He had to let go of the idea, I am Jesus. This is my story. This is my history. This is who I am. This is what I did. This is what I didn't do. He had to let go of all of that. Don't you think we have to let go of all of that too? What we often don't see on the spiritual path is our spiritual superstitions, I'll just call them right now. Spiritual beliefs that we have adopted and said, this is truth. When it's not truth, it's more non-truth that is now a part of our ego identity. So he's recommending we let go of all this. And then he says, by self-effort and self-knowledge, that's a capital S, right? By self-effort and self-knowledge, knowing who you really are, not the person who has this belief about Jesus, or not the person who has this belief about reincarnation, or not the person who has this belief that there is no reincarnation. You see, both are the equal mistake, right? You are not the person who has this belief. That whole idea is an error. By self-knowledge, by knowing who you are, awareness. Then he says, make the mind no mind. The way that I would word that is disengage from the mind entirely. Just disengage from it. You know, thoughts may appear, but you don't have to believe any of them. So let's look and see what was written in the journal. Number 638. What is truth? What do I know through direct experience to be absolutely true? What do I know through direct experience to be absolutely true? That's an excellent question. Do I know through direct experience that Jesus was or was not married to Mary Magdalene? Do I know through direct experience that Jesus did or did not spend years in India? See, these are all beliefs. Do I know through direct experience even that there was a man named Jesus who walked the planet? At some level, when you look deeply at that, you'll see that two is a belief. What do I know right now in this moment from direct experience to be true? I could say I know I am. I can't even say I know what I am. What I am, I can't say. If you look very, very carefully, you'll notice you can't say what I am. But the fact that I am, the fact that I is, the fact that existence is here, that I know. That's the only direct experience that we actually have. Everything else is belief. Everything else is belief. What is truth? What do I know through direct experience to be absolutely true? Hold on to that and let all else go. Do not be fooled by beliefs or theories. Hold on to the one thing known to be true. Keep that in focus always. And you know, I'm reminded right now of Nisargadatta Maharaj, because Nisargadatta Maharaj said that his guru told him to hold on to the sense of I am to the exclusion of everything else. And that's really what this journal entry is asking us to do. That's our one direct experience, I am. hold on to the sense of I am, not the thought, but the feeling of it, the knowing of it. Hold on to the sense of I am to the exclusion of everything else. Let's see, Lynn says, but even with direct experience, there can be misperceptions, can't there? I think, Lynn, what's happening is you aren't yet seeing what direct experience is. And it takes a long time to see what direct experience is. I went through a lot of inquiry before I understood what direct experience is. But if you say something to me, Lynn, your saying it to me, my hearing it, is not direct experience, which is why it can be misunderstood. I hear you saying it with the senses, my mind interprets it, but awareness watches the mind interpret it. I don't know how to explain this quickly, and I've only got like 2 minutes. That's not direct experience. If you think the direct experience is awareness, being alive, then the mind interpreting is one level away from direct experience. Hearing is 2 levels away from direct experience. And you, as an other to me, is 3 levels away from direct experience. So if I say, I misunderstand you, it really means I didn't have a direct experience of you. It's an interpretive experience. I only have one direct experience. We all only have one direct experience. Your direct experience and my direct experience is not at all different. There's one direct experience, and that is the experience of existence. I am. Yeah, as Kathy says, there's no interpretation in direct experience. Therefore, there can be no misinterpretation in direct experience. And again, Nisargadatta said his guru told him to hold on to the sense of I am to the exclusion of everything else. And he says, I did that. I trusted my guru, and I did that. And 3 years. 3 years, he says, it took him to awaken to his true self through focusing only on that. Now, I have to leave in 1 minute to go see if I can find Mukti. So let me read 638 to you one more time, and then I need to turn the mic over to someone, maybe Lynn Johnson, if you're available, to play some music or something while I go get Mukti. But here's number 638. What is truth? What do I know? Again, there's no interpretation in this knowledge. What do I know through direct experience to be absolutely true? Now, it doesn't say what that is here, but that is, again, that sense of I am, I exist, I is, right? Hold on to that, just that sense. And let all else go, all your beliefs about Jesus, your beliefs about reincarnation, your beliefs about, you know, what A Course in Miracles means or doesn't mean, right? Do not be fooled by beliefs or theories. Hold on to the one thing known to be true. Keep that in focus always.